Hi, everybody. My name is Bea Bonner, and you're listening to Community Voices right here on NPR Illinois. Today, I am talking to Dr. Ty Dooley, Associate Professor of Public Administration at the University of Illinois Springfield. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Bea. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. I wish it were under different circumstances, though.
Right. I like to tell people all the time, if this were normal times, I would invite you to the studio, get you a cup of water, and we would just talk all day. But you know what? Zoom is here, and we're just going to keep pushing along. So on that note, how about you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from?
Okay, so I'm originally from Arkansas, Stuttgart, Arkansas, where I grew up. And long story short, got into teaching and research at the university level back in 2004 at the University of Central Arkansas. I was there for a year as an emergency hire instructor position, that kind of thing. And then they said, in order for me to go ahead and continue after the first year was over, I'd have to go ahead and go and get my PhD. And so it's like, okay, I went to the University of Arkansas. I graduated in 2010 with a PhD in public policy. And then we moved to Dallas, Texas for my wife's job. My wife is an attorney. She's brilliant. And so we moved down there for her career. And then we were there for a couple of years. We transitioned to Illinois back in 2014. And that was so when I got a position at UIS then. We stayed here for 3 years at that point. Went to Memphis, an opportunity to go down there and run their program, a public administration program. Did that for a couple of years. The call of Springfield sort of was still in our hearts. And so we wanted to go ahead and return to the great state of Illinois and the city of Springfield. And we did that. We transitioned back about 2 years ago. So it'll be 2019. And so, you know, it's been a great experience at UIS. It's one of the great institutions. And as far as the system, the University of Illinois system is one of the great institutions, actually, not just in the United States, but really on the planet, right? A top 50 research institution in the world. So it's great to be here and work with some very talented folks.
That's awesome. And I have to tell you, my dad's side of the family is from Arkansas, and then they came to Chicago. So we may be related. Who knows?
We probably are.
And I just have to ask you, what made you want to go into public administration?
You know, that's a great question. So my bachelor's degree is in political science. My master's degree is in political science. And so that was sort of the track. I was thinking about getting a PhD in political science also. I have a great deal of respect for political scientists and what they do and the theories that are out there and what they look at. In fact, you know, some of that actually sort of informs sort of my sort of perspective as it relates to public policy and from that standpoint. But what I like about public administration is sort of the practical aspect, the practitioner aspect of it a bit more, in that you think about what public policy actually is and what public administration actually deals with. It's, you know, it's any sort of action or inaction in government. And we think about how things get done, right? You know, legislatures, you know, pass laws and then they're implemented though by agencies, right? And so that's sort of where, in my opinion, where the real action happens. And so if you want to impact public policy in an interesting way, the political process is one thing, but this sort of implementation of those laws is another, right? So this rulemaking and those types of things. So for me, I think you can impact people a little bit more when we look at a public administration. And we've got a great program at UIS.
Yeah, that's really strong. I don't think a lot of people know about actually the implementation of rules and laws and how they actually affect your life. And I think that's one way we're kind of lacking, and hopefully to get some people to really think about what's actually going on in our society.
Exactly. So you know, you think about these things, and oftentimes we think about calling our member of Congress or calling a legislator or something along those lines. But really, if you really wanted to go ahead and get something implemented, you know, maybe a little faster, possibly, you want to contact the agency, right? The agency is the one that has oversight, they have rulemaking abilities, they can do implementation and those types of things. And so it's really important that there are other sort of mechanisms out there besides speaking with your member of Congress or your member of a legislator. Not to diminish what they do, but honestly, the people who actually deliver the services are the ones you really want to contact first.
I think that's really good advice, because I think there's a lot of things people want to change, but they don't know exactly where to go. So I think that's really smart. And now moving on, I want to switch gears just a little bit. So I was made aware about a blog post that you wrote. It's called A Teachable Moment, Public Spaces Are Not Public. And it addresses several topics such as white spaces, teachable moments. And before we dive into the blog post too deep, can you explain a little bit what the term, you know, white spaces or teachable moments might mean?
Okay, so for me, when you think about teachable moments, a teachable moment is really an opportunity, I think, to go ahead and sort of look at an area of society where there is some incongruence, right? Where there's an inconsistency, right? When you think about public administration, teachable administration, we think about this notion of rules, right? And I'm a very rule oriented person. So, but here's a key sort of notion: we think about rules. The same rules that apply to you should apply to me, right? And that's this notion really of fairness. Or a better term, right, that we think about is justice. So justice is what's fair, right? That's really the component of that. And so how that ties into to white spaces, right, when we think about that, we think about public spaces in general, and people know what public spaces actually are. Right? When you leave outside of your own apartment or home or house or what have you, right? Then those spaces where you're interacting with other members in society, right? Those are public spaces, and there are different sort of things that govern those public spaces. Now, in a democracy, ideally, that's based on our constitution, right? Where we're all supposed to be treated equally, or everything is supposed to be fair, right? Going back to this whole notion of fairness and justice. Well, we have liberty, but we also have justice. So we have those two different sort of components together, and so. So how we engage and interact with each other should be equivalent. So there should not be any distinction between how I'm treated versus how you're treated versus how somebody else is treated. And so there's been research that's been done on that, particularly as it relates to marginalized populations in this country, that public spaces are not public for all Americans, right? Public spaces are really white spaces because people of color are treated differently than white people. I want to make this very clear, this distinction. We are treated differently in those public spaces when compared to white people. And that's a problem. And so the blog post really sort of talks about an unfortunate incident that occurred on February 16th for me when I was going to bank, do some very simple banking in terms of some things sort of happened that were unfortunate.
So when this incident happened, well, first, can you tell us a little bit about the incident for people that may not have read the post yet, if you don't mind?
Sure, not a problem. So a couple of days after Abraham Lincoln's birthday, in the heart of Black History Month, during this time frame, we were getting some work done on our basement. We're basically finishing our basement out, which is a new concept for me coming from Arkansas. We don't have basements, so this has been sort of an interesting sort of process. And so, long story short, contractors were down there, and they like to be paid in cash. I don't know if anyone knows this or not, but if you have a contractor, typically contractors want cash. They don't want a credit card. They don't want a check. Now, you can do that. They don't like it. So, yeah, I had no problem with that. There is a local bank that we bank with that was recommended to us. And so I said, you know what? I've got plenty of money in the bank. I'm going to go down there and I'm going to get this money out. And it was a substantial amount. And so I drove down to the bank. I went to the drive-thru. We're also in a pandemic. Just keep that part in mind. It's during a pandemic. And so now, God willing, we're coming out of the pandemic. Hopefully everyone can go get their shot. Or shots, right? But anyway, not long story short. So I go down to the bank, go to the drive-thru. I have all my information. I have all of my ID and that kind of thing. Write the check out. And I send it over. And then the person working at the bank, the teller, she said, we can't cash this check. And I asked them why. It's like, this check is beyond the drive-through limit. I'm like, okay. you have my ID, you can see my face, you've got all these cameras, right? We go to a bank, there's all these cameras, those types of things. I don't understand sort of the issue. It's like, you're going to have to come in if you want to go ahead and cash the check. I'm like, we're in a pandemic. This is silly. You realize that? So she said, well, that's the rule. Okay. I was like, okay. So I go in, drive around, go into the bank, go in there. And I asked the teller, why is this, what is this process? It's a policy, apparently. This is a rule. This is a policy. Can I see the policy? Right. So, I mean, if it's actually a rule or policy, could you just let me see it? Right. And so she was not sure. And then I asked her also in terms of like, so why do you have this policy to begin with? Right. So while we were sort of waiting on the supervisor to come over because the teller really couldn't tell me. And so I wanted to speak to the supervisor because to me, it's a little silly. Right. But again, it's a question, right? I've banked with this bank. We have plenty of money to go in there. So not a big deal. So long story short, she could not tell me the policy. She could not produce the policy. She couldn't give me the rationale why they actually had the policy. The supervisor comes over and I asked the supervisor to see the policy. I asked the supervisor about the rationale for the policy. And I said, you know what? I teach this for a living. I teach administrative rules. So here's an example of why you might have this policy. So perhaps you've had a number of drive-offs, right? Or there's some identity theft that's going on, right? And so you've had, how many instances of those have you had in the last 30 days? How many instances of those have you had in the last 6 months, right? So I was actually trying to help them, right? That wasn't sort of how they took it, right? So at one point the supervisor said, well, I don't know you. So the policy is different if you know me? So basically, I'm going to have to see the written policy because maybe this policy only applies to me, right? And so the supervisor goes off, I'll get the policy for you. Okay. And I tell the bank chair, I'm like, this is kind of silly, right? I mean, if you have a policy, you should have it written down. You should be able to articulate why you actually have it. You make me come to the bank. This is the pandemic. This is a little ridiculous, right? Again, was not disrespectful. Didn't raise my voice. Didn't threaten anybody. Nothing along those lines. The teller said she understood. I also told her, like, I'm not upset with you. I said, so don't misconstrue that. I'm not upset with you at all. So long story short, she counts out the money. I get it. I wait another 3, 4, or 5 minutes. Supervisor has not come back. At this point, I'm thinking like, okay, it's time to go. This is a little silly. I need to get back and pay my contractors. And so I go around the corner to leave the bank, to exit the bank. And there is the bank president standing with law enforcement. And I looked at her and I said, you called the police on me for asking about a policy? And her response was, I didn't like the way you were speaking to my employees. But there, you do realize in this environment, they are assassinating Black men. Why would you call law enforcement for this sort of situation, right? So anyway, long story short, end up leaving the bank, no further incident, credit union, actually not a bank, credit union, with no further incident there. But it was kind of, to me, that left a really bad sort of impression. It caused a lot of anxiety, those types of things. And so, being an academic, and focusing on issues related to public administration, public policy, and these areas that relates to social equity and social justice, I was like, if nothing else, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to write about it. So I also spoke with some agencies that are responsible, have oversight functions as relates to banking and Springfield and that kind of thing. So we'll see what happens there. But also wanted to go ahead and write the blog post, and that's kind of what happened.
Well, I'm really sorry that happened to you, first of all. And as a Black woman, I can relate. There have been times where I have had to check myself before I go in places to make sure, am I speaking in a threatening tone? Am I going to come off a certain way to people? And I don't think we should have to do that. I don't think anyone should have to do that, as a matter of fact, but it is the reality, that we live in.
And that's a broader sort of point. I think this emphasizes this notion of public spaces are not actually public, that, you know, they are white spaces, right? This emphasizes this notion that we have to be, by we, I'm talking about people of color, have to always be exemplars. We have to be on our best behavior at all times. You know, otherwise, right, we're treated differently, right? So whether, you know, and I'm every person of color that I know of anyway, you know, has had an incident where they have been in a store and had someone follow them through the store thinking that they were going to do, you know, something, you know, wrong, right? Every Black person that I know of has had that sort of situation happen. And so it's one of those situations where you have to be an exemplar. You have to be, you know, dressed a certain way. You can't be overly emotional. You can't be anything less than the ideal, perfect, happy, you know, middle of the road person, because if you are having a bad day and it comes across, you might have law enforcement called on you. And, you know, thank God that the law enforcement folks that came out, I'm not saying that the police in Springfield are perfect, but I can say that the officers that responded to the bank's, to the credit union's call were very professional, right? Had it been a different person, maybe, you know, this could have been a decidedly different sort of outcome that would have not been very good for anyone.
Right. And you address policing actually in the blog post as well, and the ideals of some, you know, people in power upholding these white spaces and these power structures. So after writing this blog post and kind of going through this experience, how can we as people, just people in general, how can we uphold the enforcers of these social structures to be accountable?
That, you know, accountability is really the critical sort of component of what we're looking at, right? And so I will say this, and this is a great question. And I believe it was John Lewis, right, before he passed, who said, sometimes you got to go ahead and get into a little bit of good trouble, right? And so how we, okay, so we think about, I have to circle back around very quickly, and I sometimes I'm a little long-winded, and you have to forgive me. But one of the things we think about as it relates to law enforcement, the police are enforcers of the social order. And what the social order, when we think about what that actually means is, right, it means that they're enforcers of our collective values. Because our society is founded on racist principles, you have to go no further, you know, than to look at the Constitution. I know a number of folks always sort of think about, well, our founding fathers just look, you know, all we need is to look into the Constitution for, and that's all that's required. You know, all these other laws that have come back and regulations, you know, aren't necessary. When you look at the Constitution, you'll see that the founding fathers were racist. They were, you know, did they have some good thoughts and some good ideas? Sure. Right. Were they racist? Yes. And so when we think about what our social order actually sort of is as a reflection, right, of our values, you look at our overarching mission statement, which is the Constitution, right, and everything that institutions have been built and developed out of that, right, are racist, right? And so how we go ahead and modify those, right, is we have to look to the civil rights movement after the Civil War, even abolitionists, but before that, we look to the civil rights movement in the 1930s, the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, the ongoing civil rights movement that's occurring. And so what you have to do is you have to agitate, you have to speak out, you have to speak out against wrong. Because if you don't say or do anything, then not speaking out against wrong is wrong. Right. So you have to be a part of the solution. So holding our institutions accountable is critically important.
And how do you encourage other people that may not be of color in a minority group to be good allies and to also speak out?
That's a great point. I mean, because we didn't get here by ourselves, right? We think about this notion of justice in the United States, right? There are a number of folks that have aided that might not directly be impacted, but are directly impacted, you know, by issues of racism from that standpoint. So in terms of, I would say that that you have to encourage other folks who may not be experiencing what you're experiencing, right? To tell them about it, to tell your friends that may not be people of color about your experiences in terms of what's going on. Because here's the thing, light is the enemy of darkness. And so when we think about shedding a light on these things in society, right? Then that elevates what's going on, right? And really sort of creates really a this notion really of change that can occur. But you have to speak out whenever possible. So don't let it go. The point I'm trying to make though is don't let it go. Speak out whenever you experience or see wrong, particularly as it relates to race, to not only like-minded folks, people of color, and those types of things, but make sure you speak out to like-minded folks who are white and other ethnicities, because here's sort of the thing, right? People can understand suffering, right? And we think about issues related to bias or those types of things. There are differences between, people who live in rural areas, feel biased compared to folks who live in cities, right? In the rural areas, think, well, we're not getting as many resources and those types of things as maybe they're getting in Springfield or Chicago and those types of things. So this notion of fairness and equity resonates in my view, really, regardless of race, gender, creed, sexual orientation, that kind of thing.
And I think it really goes back to what you learn in kindergarten, the golden rule. Just be kind to one another. It doesn't take a lot to say, please, thank you, have a good day. Basic things that I think in our society, we should be practicing more, because it's going to make a big difference.
That's fair. That's a great point.
And that kind of leads me to my next point. So as we move forward in America and we keep seeing all these different changes, how can we make sure that we are actually progressing and helping each other along the way?
You're raising a lot of great points, and the points you're raising, right, are really sort of moving beyond sort of the notion of agitation, right? Right. So I like to quote a few people, and I believe it was Reverend Sharpton, it talked about first, you have agitation, and then you have legislation, right? And then you have implementation, but then there is sort of this feedback loop that occurs too. Once it's implemented, though, that's not the end of the journey, right? The accountability is what happens, right? In that feedback loop, you have to continue to go ahead and hold people in power, people who are hitting these institutions accountable for when they do wrong, when they deviate from what's acceptable in society. And how do we sort of construct and tell what's acceptable in society? We have to speak out when society is doing the wrong thing, right? So some people will say, well, can't you get over it? Well, no, I can't get over when someone is doing something that's wrong or evil or unjust, right? You have to speak out.
I think you found a really positive way to think about and look at an unfortunate experience. You didn't let it stop you and make you bitter and just make you shut down. I think it's helped you to kind of rationalize and show other people what needs to be done so incidents like this don't continue to happen.
Exactly. Build a better world really for ourselves and for our children.
Exactly. Now, is there any place people can keep up with you if they want to maybe discuss this a little further or get to know what you have to say about topics like this?
Well, you can always shoot me an email. I'd be happy to respond to any kind of email, any email that someone sends me. So it's going to be T as in Ty, D as in David, O as in orange, another O as in orange, L as in Larry, and then the number 3 at uis.edu.
Perfect. And is there any way you'd like to, anything you'd like to add or let our audience know to wrap things up?
Well, my thing is one incident should never define who you are. And when you are mistreated, there are a number of ways to go ahead and respond and react to it. I would suggest that you respond in a positive way, get into a little good trouble, if you will, and try to hold those folks accountable. You speak out, and I think that ultimately the universe will listen.